This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Sweatfest 2023. I'm Matt. Yee. Who's going to be my squeegee buddy? God, is it... This is Savannah, Georgia in summer right now. Have you ever been in the South, Brett, during the summer months?
Yeah. Nashville, Tennessee. For a while, yeah. It's not... not quite as bad as Savannah. Is Nashville south of Savannah?
No, Savannah's south of Nashville. Yeah. Savannah's Tennessee.
Yes, yeah, so that's
got to
be worse.
Have you seen a map? Okay, never mind. Okay. Jefferson City, Missouri gets pretty brutal. Oh, that gets pretty brutal. No, Savannah is probably the heat with humidity. Unless you're in southern Florida, which is frankly the tropics. I mean, that's the tropics. You mean you're in rainforest down there. That is probably the hottest you get there, which makes so much sense why every food item in Savannah is heavily laden with fat and butter. And now I figured it out. Oh, dear Lord. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Brett here today. Terry Hempelman's going to join us. He is one of the actors from the Guthrie. We had him on for Sweat last year, the play that they did over there. He is back in Shane, and I'm fascinated that they've developed that for the stage. We'll talk to him about that, currently playing at the Guthrie. That's about 4:35 this afternoon. Have you been outside lately, Brett?
Not for a long time, fortunately, and I don't plan on spending a lot of time outside, even after I leave the station.
I'm bunking up here today. I went out this morning to walk the dog at 6:15. I said, oh, this is not good. This is not good. It's nasty outside. Be careful. If you're not drinking plenty of water, drink plenty of water and get out of the sun if you can. I went to basic training in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. It was a delight. It was summer. It was probably the greatest weight loss program I've ever seen in my life. But even there, they were like, get in the shade, get drinking water. I mean, even as you're going through basic training, they were like, we're not going to have half our platoon pass out. And so be careful out there, especially if you're doing any work or anything like that. Just take it easy. And if you see anyone out there that's doing a lot of work, go get them a bottle of water or something like that. All right. Ugh. It does look like some storms might pop up a little bit later on. I think it was like 5 o'clock tonight. They're saying now, that there was a chance of, some storms coming in here. Yeah. 5 PM, something like that. And then definitely later on this evening. And that's not a surprise. I mean, you just got this much humidity, this much heat, it's going to fire up. So wind threats of 2, hail threats of 2. I posted Sven's weather forecast to bring me the news up on all the socials. So you can go catch that there. There's nothing here to protect. If hail starts coming down, I'm not happy about this. I mean, although it's better than that. What was up north of us? That lake that got hammered by the baseball-size hail?
Oh, yeah. That was a crazy video to watch. You saw, yeah.
That is
bouncing in the water.
God,
yeah.
I'd find a tree or a building or something, try to find something to get out of the way of that. But even if you did find something sturdy – I mean, that's bad day for you. it's God's golf game, and he's hit the traps. And so watch out.
That's a case if you're in the open. You got to duck and cover. Otherwise, you're going to get pelted in the head, and that will hurt.
it will hurt greatly. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. We caught them. I saw this story. And this makes me happy. Two men from England are in federal custody on suspicion of posing as local construction contractors, then deliberately damaging homes in the Twin Cities to secure business, according to authorities. You remember this story from a few days ago? They had the people that were coming up saying, we're going to roof your house, brought in an invoice that made it look like a legit company, went up there, tore apart their roofs, and then ran and took the money?
Yeah, that's pretty common, unfortunately, sometimes.
Well, these guys were bad. I mean, because they figured out they printed out a fake invoice from an actual company. So you would have looked it up and called, but someone eventually figured out. So they called up the company. The company was like, we have no knowledge of this. Minnetonka Police Department said the suspects were identified by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and arrested on Tuesday afternoon. Two teenagers traveling with the adults have been taken into protective custody, according to police. Police began investigating Monday when a homeowner reported concerns regarding contractors offering to repair the chimney on her home, according to a news release from the Minnetonka Police Department. Okay, so let's talk about how stupid these guys are. It becomes a pretty widely covered story that they're doing this, and they didn't get the heck out of town. You went to Minnetonka. I mean, I guess it's not Edina or Wayzata or Marine on St. Croix, but you're still in a pretty wealthy suburb. They don't tolerate this kind of stuff. You're kind of two stupid English guys, aren't you? Dumbass. The woman told the police the crew had shown her photos of the damage, and she later found broken chimney pieces on the ground in her backyard. So they apparently, once again, contractors came out. They're there to repair the chimney. They came out. They said we found damage on the chimney, and she found actually broken chimney pieces on the ground in her backyard. So she basically said, okay, they broke my chimney. According to police, the homeowner contacted the company listed on the handwritten invoice, Advantage Construction, and discovered the work crew had no connection to the local firm. Authorities were then waiting for the suspects to take the suspects into custody when they returned to the woman's home on Tuesday. The individual in this case did what we want people to do, Minnetonka Police Captain Andy Gardner stated in a news release. She asked the work crew for identification and more information. When it didn't make sense, she called the police. Police are currently working with other law enforcement agencies and local contractors in the Twin Cities to determine the scope of the allegations and the extent of the damage. In many cases, the homeowner said they were visited by people offering free roof inspections, the news release states. The contractors returned with photos of damage they insisted needed to be repaired and sometimes offered to drive the homeowners to the bank to provide payment. Gardner encourages anyone working with contractors to hold off on signing any contracts until the company information and the state license can be verified. Police also advise against paying repairs in cash. That's your first big thing. That or, Outback Steakhouse gift cards. You know, we got a new program here at the old contractors here. We sure do love TGI Fridays. And if you've got $400 worth of gift cards for TGI Fridays, we'll get cracking right on that roof for you. No.
Yeah, payments for gift cards. It's funny you mention that. Snap Construction does advertising with us, and I remember Ryan talking about that. Like, don't fall for the door-to-door, sales. Oh, we're here to repair your roof. Really? Yeah.
Well, yeah, and don't let them up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, what these guys were doing
was
they were going up and creating the damage.
Exactly.
And then saying, see, you need to get this fixed. And in this case, they went up there and apparently did some substantial damage to this woman's chimney. And here's the bad part about all these homeowners, every one of them. They're going to have to file a homeowner's insurance claim because I guarantee you these two clown cars probably have, either drank the money away already or, shipped it off and they can't find it. Needless to say, these guys, if they can put together, how many charges could they get against them? I believe it was 4 or 5 in the original story. So you got 6 here. If it's 5, they got 6 here. So that's per case. These guys, I hope your passport's up to date because by the time you get out, it might be expired. You're not going to get out of jail anytime soon, are you? You clowns. Oh, and what's with the teenagers? That's a little scary here. Are we talking like underage teenagers that were? I hope not.
Well, you're going to break one law, might as well break them all with underage workers.
Pound for pound, I would. Well, I'm not thinking it's underage workers. I'm wondering if it's underage, kids that they've tricked into following them, and they're cool guys, and they're just kidding. So okay, let's figure what let's run this here. These two clowns come in here. They use their, we're English, we're cool. They come to this. They get some kids to follow around because they think that they're really cool. So basically, they might have underage kids with them, as predators. And then they go out to this house. We say, we need $5,000. Go get $5,000. Then they're running over to the Mall of America and buying what they want to get. And I guarantee you there's going to be some serious fallout from this. And I hope these guys – seriously, these guys need to go to jail for a little bit. They need to go to jail for a little bit. I mean, this is brazen beyond brazen. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit of the carryover from the 4th of July, but, you know, didn't we kick the Brits out of this country? I like Britain. Hey, don't get me wrong. I love it. I've been there many times. It's a lovely place. But this, what is this? Oh, I guarantee. Can you imagine the stories they're telling the Minnetonka police right now? All right. You remember when I told you that we're going to be doing this? Now, that's a little more Irish than – remember – I don't even know. Didn't they think these guys were Irish? Do you think they were putting on a fake Irish accent?
Yeah, if they're faking it, they could be mixing them up quite a bit.
Well, I mean, how many people would figure? I mean, it's you know, most people here don't hear a, howdy, cowboy. Are you from Iowa? No. They're not. Everyone seems to know the Boston accent, but no one else – nothing else seems to resonate. Oh, nicely done. To the homeowner here, by the way, I'm very, very sorry about your chimney. But can I just say a round of applause to you for getting these clowns. Absolutely, absolutely wonderful. Very, very happy to hear that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want to – so there's a story I have to bring up. And I want to bring up because I want to show you the insane double standard that the Republicans have in regards to the Republican Party and any other party. Now, we could point to stuff like the Republicans all demanding Al Franken resign his seat without a trial, and meanwhile, Matt Gaetz is sitting there, clearly a problem, and they're perfectly fine with him staying in. You know, in Congress. I'll never forget or forgive the Republicans for what happened early on in Trump's presidency when four American soldiers were killed in Niger. And the same political party who was screaming about Benghazi incessantly, we need justice for Americans who died. All of a sudden said, well, we got four Americans who died in Niger. Shouldn't we have an investigation into that? Oh, no, I don't think there's anything to question here. The same Republicans who had eight Benghazi investigations, every one of them saying there was nothing to see here, who, if Hillary Clinton would have won in 2016, had already vowed to start a ninth and tenth Benghazi investigation. Because they still had questions. Reading from the New York Times from a few years ago. Cut off from their unit, a tiny band of American soldiers was outnumbered and outgunned in the deserts of Niger, fighting to stay alive under a barrage of gunfire from fighters loyal to the Islamic State, jogging quickly at a crouch. Staff Sergeant Brian Black motioned to the black SUV beside him to keep moving. At the wheel, Staff Sergeant Dustin Wright tried to steer while leaning away from the gunfire, but the militants wielding assault rifles and wearing dark scarves and baklavas kept closing in. Sergeant Black suddenly went down. With one hand, Sergeant Wright dragged his wounded comrade into the precarious shielding of the SUV, took up a defensive position, his M4 carbine braced on his shoulder. Black yelled at a third American soldier, Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Johnson, checking for the wounds. Sergeant Black lay on his back, motionless and unresponsive. Concerned, Sergeant Wright and Sergeant Johnson finally took off, sprinting through the desert under a hail of fire. Sergeant Johnson was hit and went down still alive. At that point, Sergeant Wright stopped running with only the thorny bush for cover. He turned and fired on the militants, advancing towards his fallen friend. These were the last minutes of the lives of three American soldiers killed on October 4th during an ambush in the desert scrub of Niger that was recorded on military helmet camera. The fourth American, Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, who had gotten separated from the group, also died in the attack, the largest life loss of American troops during combat in Africa since 1993, the Black Dawn debacle in Somalia, which, once again, the Republicans made a whole big deal about. The four men, along with four Nigerian soldiers and an interpreter, were killed in a conflict that few Americans knew anything about, not just the public, but also the families and even some senior American lawmakers. So, I talked extensively about this and the shame I had for the Republicans, Minnesota Republicans, federal Republicans, all of you. shame on all of you, because you quickly diminished these people. You quickly swept the troops aside. The support the troops, the yellow ribbon cowards that you are. Yellow is the right color for you guys. You sat there and, well, there's nothing to see here because Donald Trump was the president. Even though there were multiple reports that the entire conflict that led to the death of these four soldiers was being orchestrated from within inside the White House. Not a single Republican demanded even a hearing on this. Benghazi, four dead Americans, eight investigations, promises of ninth and tenth ones. This happens. Even though we have pretty credible evidence that the White House was somehow coordinating this, not a single peep as four dead Americans lay dead in Niger. Not a peep. Because those dead Americans did not matter to the Republican Party. They did not, because they had no political purpose. If they could, if it was a Democratic president, we need to have immediate investigations. How could we have four dead Americans again? But because it was Donald Trump, it was, you know, combat is hard. I mean, my God, there were even Congress people who said we didn't even realize there were troops in Niger. Someone authorized this, and it was never once investigated. Even though there were allegations it was being orchestrated from the White House. Not a single question. So when people tell me, I'm a Republican, I support the troops, the first words out of my mouth are, bull, and well, I can't say the rest of that. But as an Army veteran, U.S. Army veteran, if you care about the troops, it doesn't matter who the president is. You guys showed your true colors, that you didn't care about the troops. Not these troops, not the troop that died in Yemen. Not once. But all of a sudden, when after Biden was hand-tied with Afghanistan and there was attacks, oh my God, we have American troops who were killed. We needed full investigations again. Because once again, for everyone at home, playing at home, Republicans do not care about the troops unless they can use them as a political weapon. They do not care. Do not care. It makes me mad. As a veteran, it makes me really freaking mad, because I'd sure as heck like to know how these four soldiers got killed and who at the White House was coordinating this event. No need to look into that, because, hey, Republicans, you're all cowards too. Can I just say this? I'll say it to every one of your damn faces. You're a bunch of freaking cowards. Pathetic. And you betrayed the troops and this country yet once again. Now, I'm going to take a break here. I'm going to calm down, because, once again, this story infuriated me. And it did. I mean, I think we actually have the audio of me from a few years ago still up on YouTube going to town on this.
Oh, I remember that video. Yes,
oh,
we do.
I think we still do. That being said, the point of me doing this is not to, you know, raise my blood pressure again. My doctor has warned me against that, but it's to point out the double standard. And when I come back, I want to break down the fact that Republicans right now are asking for a possible impeachment ceremony in the House. Ceremony is the right term. It's not actually, it's pageantry. It's theater. That's all it is. And the reality is there is a story from the last few weeks, which isn't the biggest story, but I can tell you right now, if the president involved had a D next to their name, holy God, there would be immediate calls for an impeachment. I guarantee it. If it was a Democrat who was responsible. It's not exactly the biggest story, but it should tell you how absolutely polar opposite Republicans have become when it comes to actual justice standards. We're the party of decency. We're the party of integrity. Bull crud. You only look at the letter next to their name to determine your outrage level. And it's not bad enough that you get over the top when it's a D. It's the fact that you dismiss truly ugly and horrible behavior if it's an R. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Breathing exercises. Calm down. Brett, you remember something about the story after the four soldiers were killed in Niger, correct? What was that again?
Yeah, I remember this back from your video you had a few years ago that did attract the attention of a number of Trump trolls back then.
Oh, but, yeah.
But one of the points you brought up, and I had forgotten about this till I saw that video again. I was looking at it here. So as Donald Trump, I believe, was calling one of the widows of the soldiers that got killed, he apparently forgot the name of the soldier and basically said, well, that's what he signed up for.
Calm breathing. Stay relaxed. Don't lose it, Matt. This is not going to be an hour of me just screaming about what an absolute jackass and traitor to the country that Donald Trump was and the enablers at the Republican Party, including Tom Emmer and Pete Stauber and whoever the, you know, junior has done in one and her up in. No, Matt, calm down. Anywho. The point I'm bringing up is that we have a long laundry list of the massive level of hypocrisy that is existing within the Republican Party. A long, detailed list. As Trump is about to get indicted for the third time. By the way, has that happened today? Because remember, they were meeting. Jack Smith and his lawyers were meeting with Trump's lawyers today after the grand jury ended. It sounded like there was, I mean, you can hear the orange Julius over there the sweating. They haven't filed charges or anything. I haven't seen anything. No breaking news.
No, I'm looking at the wires here. Nothing yet with them.
Yeah, we could have a breaking news day. It'd be his third indictment, which means I think he gets a small drink with that. Punch card, dear Lord. Anyway, Trump is – he's horrible. He's a horrible human being, and he's going to get indicted for the third time. And Republicans are desperate to try to say, no, stop paying attention to that. Biden, Hunter Biden, naked Hunter Biden. Oh, taxes. Oh, there's this one thing. I remember yesterday we talked with Stein about his senator down there putting out this one note that basically their entire argument is based on one interview done by a field agent where he interviewed someone who they can't find anymore, by the way, who said that Hunter Biden was taking bribes for Joe Biden from Burisma. That is it. No, they have looked into it. They couldn't find anything that corroborated that statement. They couldn't find any evidence, and they couldn't find the individual. And as one person said, it was almost like someone came in just to make this statement and leave just so this was out there so people could use this possibly to make things up. Needless to say, there's no evidence of it. And every time the Republicans have a hearing about Hunter Biden or Joe Biden, it blows up in their face spectacularly. But it doesn't mean they're going to stop. They're probably going to say, we still have questions. That's why an impeachment is warranted. That's what they're going to say. Even though their whole thing is that if they create this standard that basically you don't even have to have evidence, you just have to have the thought that something was bad is happening. Can you imagine how many impeachments, if Trump was to win again, how many impeachments would he have? It'd be the impeachment of the day. I mean, he'd spend his entire presidency in the Senate under trial. It'd be hilarious. Anyway, that aside. Once again, to catch everyone up, as Donald Trump is basically getting ready to be indicted the third time for breaking the law, Republicans are trying to create anything to be able to try to impeach Joe Biden, not because that Joe Biden's done anything wrong, but they're desperately trying to take the headlines off of Donald Trump. That's just that. And by the way, I know yesterday Stein said he didn't think that the House Republicans would vote for it because there is way too many moderate Republicans that would basically end their careers if that happened. The reality is I have zero doubt the Republicans will say you're out of the party unless you vote this way, and that will they'll force the hand. Anyway, I bring this up because there's a story out there that I'm just going to read to you. Now, this story has been updated, although the update itself warrants a little bit of an interest. And I'm going to be the first to say, this is not the most important story from the last week. Probably not the 10th most important story. Probably in regards to stories about Trump in the last few weeks, it's probably number 20 or 30. There's a lot more that's going on there, okay? But still, holy God. Donald Trump will finally return the ancient artifacts sent to the U.S. by Israel in 2019 after the items had a lengthy stay at Mar-a-Lago. Israel sent the items to the U.S. in December of 2019 for a Hanukkah event at the White House. The artifacts were meant to be displayed for the 2019 event and then returned to Israel, but the U.S. State Department prevented the display over concerns they may have been taken from the occupied West Bank. All right, so they sent over some items. They never really had the thing, but needless to say, there it is. It's rare Israeli area, Middle Eastern area artifacts. Priceless, priceless artifacts. The artifacts, which include a set of ancient coins and a ceramic oil lamps, have been at the estate since December of 2021. It is that's a year and a half, hasn't it, Ben? That the Israeli ancient priceless artifacts have been at Mar-a-Lago, which they were loaned to us in 2019 for a Hanukkah celebration. They've been there for a while. This is according to the New York Times. They ended up there when a Republican donor, Saul Fox, gave them to the former president at a 2021 Hanukkah party at Mar-a-Lago. The items were entrusted to Fox after the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic delayed retrieval of the items, as the Israeli Antiquities Authority did not want to entrust the items to a shipping company. Fox told the Wall Street Journal that he thought the items were to be given to Trump permanently. So let me say, this guy, who is now trying to be the fall guy, says apparently, and I'm presuming he must have some relationship with Israel because they entrusted him to hold these artifacts. He thinks that ancient Israeli Middle Eastern artifacts, which the Israeli government owns, which are priceless, were meant to be given as a gift. Yeah, I'm not. That doesn't pass the smell test at all. At all. Previous efforts by senior Israeli officials to retrieve the artifacts over the past several months had failed. So once again, we want to make this point. Regardless of where Trump got these artifacts from, the Israeli government has come to him multiple times saying, hey, those are ours, and we want them back. And the Trump administration said, no, they're mine now. I'm using the coin as a back scratcher. Oh, it's delightful. I smoke dope out of the lamp. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what he's doing. I don't even want to. Yeah, I know. I really do not want to know what he's doing with these antiquities. Were they in the bathroom with the other documents? Was it like a box from a college dorm room where just there's a plate in here? Here's a cassette tape from 1988, and here's a whole bunch of old calendars. What's all this? Was that what it is? It's in one of those boxes there. It's all that cool stuff. They love me. They loved me back then. They knew I was coming. They praised me as the rising sun. No, they were just praising the sun. It's just the fact that you look like, never mind. As the items were displayed as originally intended, the office will be expediting the return to the organization's representative, the Trump spokesman said, told the Times Now. Basically, they've been caught on this. The Antiquities Authorities also told the Times in a statement that they had no claims against Mr. Donald Trump, that officials from both sides of the U.S. and Israel were working together to return the objects to their proper home, of course, because the U.S. officials are under Joe Biden now. And, yeah, so here you have this. And once again, this was starting to create a bit of an international incident that Donald Trump was not returning priceless ancient artifacts to a foreign country. Let me guess that the Republican Party is not going to investigate this. Let me come back, talk more about that in a second. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Reminder, great programming coming your way tonight. including at 8 o'clock, Rick Smith. Absolutely exceptional stuff there, 8 to 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock hour, we got Greg Bach and Ghost Box Radio. I heard it was a hoot last night talking about the UFO
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they were talking about the UFO hearings over at Congress last night.
Like I said, I'm just wondering, it's like when you say you took, you know, non-human, you know, biologics from the show, was that just like, hey, pick him up, he's kind of heavy? Or was it a, I need a mop and a bucket? I just, not because it was a hard crash, but I mean, what kind of aliens are we dealing with here? Are they more like the tar monster from Scooby-Doo, or is it kind of like, you know, I'm not a human, I've got a larger forehead. Thank you, MST3K. that's a gold. Look at that huge forehead. Oh, clearly not human. So that's there. And then, of course, at 11 o'clock, one of my favorites. She's just fantastic. Patty Vasquez out of Chicago. We have her on the air at 11 o'clock weeknights right here on AM 950. Make sure you're joining us every single night, 952-946-6205. So I want to make sure I reiterate something here I did not talk about the last segment, and that is the original story here was not that Saul Fox gave him these at a Hanukkah party in 2021. That he had them and they went to Mar-a-Lago with him as he moved out of the White House. And would be my guess was just stored in a box someplace. Now, I'm not saying Saul Fox is a patsy who's basically been set up to basically try to give Trump some cover here. But if you're asking me what's the most likely option here, whether or not Donald Trump, when a guy who frantically grabbed as much as he possibly could when he was getting thrown out of the White House, threw in priceless antiquities from a foreign country that had been loaned to the United States specifically for a display, chucked them in the box and said, "Mine now, they're mine. I dug those up. I was on an archaeological dig and I saw these when I was building a golf course." Yeah, sure. Okay. Or do you think someone who has apparently had a long established relationship with the Israeli government, who knows that the Israeli government has a tremendous amount of pride in their antiquities and do not allow those things out of the country just willy-nilly, that somehow he thought that when he was entrusted with these antiquities, that the Israeli government was telling him, hey, give them away as a gift. You know, just when they bring you a pizza to the door, make sure you give them a priceless antiquity coin. There you go. There's your tip there. Don't spend it all in one place. Because if I can say, my gut feeling would be that's bull crap. And this could be easily solved by just figuring out at what point did the antiquities go down to Mar-a-Lago, which I imagine you could probably easily track down. This seems like an entire cover story. And once again, that was the original story. The original story was that Trump had packed them up with him, his stuff, and stashed them down in Mar-a-Lago. Mine now. You're mine now. Is he using one of the antiquated oil lamps for ketchup? Is that where we're... This thing pours out really well on steak. Ah! I don't know what to be more offended by. I love a ribeye with some Heinz 57. Boy, jeez. How many times do you think he was dropped on his head as a cat? No, never mind. That's just me. Just wild speculation. I have no idea. I'm sure his head was kept safe. Not even I can keep that one. That's a bag of cats up there, man. That's a bag of cats. Anyway, all right. So I'm sure the House Republicans are scrambling with their big friends, Israel. Remember, every single person in this country has to pledge allegiance to Israel. That's their argument. There is no closer ally to the United States, unless it's one of our warships. They know what? They love us. Do not look into the history of American warships in Israel. Anyway, but That is the Republican policy. That Israel, uber alles, even their own country, many of them even their own country, because it gives them political talking points. That's why. It is. That's kind of who these people are on the right. So you can only imagine that someone stealing Israel's priceless antiquities that were loaned to the United States under the argument of unifying with our country. Holy God, there must be scrambling to get investigations going into this. Just running down the halls of the Capitol saying, we've got a conference room ready to go. Everyone get in there. We need to know when those antiquities moved down there. Because like I said, that would be a big kind of clue on when exactly those got down there, if it was Donald Trump or this other guy that supposedly brought them down there. Anyway, but you know, you want to look into something, because this is an international incident at this point. I mean, Israel's been trying to get them back for months. And even if Fox gave them to him, someone came to him from the Israeli government and said, I'm sorry, someone gave you the, you know, let's just go with that scenario, which I'm not buying for anything. But I'll just go with it. 4 months ago. Hi, former President Trump. Hey, this is Steve from the Israeli consulate. Hey, I need to come on by. I've got some of the Israeli antiquity people here. We've tracked down some priceless antiquities from Israel that were loaned to the United States back in 2019 and never got back in our possession. And we've become aware that they're at Mar-a-Lago. And we need to send our team in there to get them, make sure they're secured, make sure they're safely stored, and get them back to Israel. When can we come by? Do you have time on Tuesday? No! I could see him pouring the ketchup out of the ancient, you know, oil lamp. No, I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea. That probably that's right there. That's probably, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm sorry. I have no idea what you're talking about. You would think to yourself that this would warrant an investigation by Republicans, their buddy Israel. Of course, nothing is going to be investigated. Of course they're not. This is just standard operating procedure. Matt Gaetz, four dead soldiers in Niger, priceless Israeli antiquities. It all doesn't matter, because it's not the fact that these are things that they should be investigated and asked about, and there should be accountability held at some basic level. It's the fact that a Republican had done this, and that the Republicans cannot even hold the George Santos accountable at this point. Because that just is, they will allow chaos to happen. The same people who claim that they are here to protect kids. If Donald Trump gunned down a six-year-old in the middle of the street, the first word out of every Republican's mouth was, well, the six-year-old was getting mouthy. Let's just be honest about it. So, just for fun, let's spin this around a little bit. What do you think the Republicans would be like today if Israel had loaned Joe Biden some ancient, priceless Israeli antiquities, and one of them was missing and had not been returned? One of them. Not for years. We'll go with 3 days. That there's in somewhere in the White House, there was a box that was put someplace it shouldn't have been put, and there was an antiquity in there. And for 3 days, there was a piece missing, but the White House found it, got it back to Israel. Israel was fine with that. They shipped them all back. No problem. Let me ask you something. Under that exact scenario, how many Republican investigations would be launched on why did Joe Biden try to steal the Israeli artifacts? How was Hunter Biden involved? Was China involved? They would parade out fixed witness after fixed witness after fixed witness to say, Joe Biden would say he wanted to keep all of them forever. Ever, they said. Does anyone back this up? Well, no. I heard it in my mind. Hunter Biden will be nightly exposés on Hunter Biden and what did he do with that antique oil lamp. While they show nude pictures with him, you know, it is one hot oil lamp. Let's just be honest with you. I mean, that oil lamp needs an OnlyFans page. I mean, that is just some hot action right there. Of course they would be. They would be going crazy because it would be everything. Israel's involved. It's Joe Biden misplaced a thing. Oh, my God. And I want to make sure we put this in perspective. And this is not the biggest story. This is not even the largest story. Donald Trump had these in Mar-a-Lago for a year and a half. For 4 months, the Israeli government's like, hey, we finally tracked them down. You got Mar-a-Lago. We need those back. No, you don't. They're right now. Kind of that's – at least that's kind of the impression I'm getting was what happened. And yet not a single Republican will call for that investigation. But if the shoe was on the other foot, if the standard was that Joe Biden lost track of one priceless Israeli antiquity for 3 hours, there would be full investigations. There would be Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert calling for immediate impeachment. They would. It's just disturbing where we are at in this country. The divide that we have is very real. We have sanity on one side. People that can step back and look at something and say, you know what? That probably needs to be investigated. That looks like a crime. And the other side of it is this. The other side is always wrong. Our side is never wrong. And that's just that. And here we are. Yet with getting ready for the third indictment of Donald Trump. And that doesn't include the soon-to-be-announced indictment in Atlanta and the soon-to-be-another indictment announced in New York, which he will not be able to get out of. And it is very clear to me that what's broken in this country is thinking that the Republicans are going to do a damn thing to help you because they're only – in it for themselves, period. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I know there are Republicans who are reasonable. I know there are. It is hard to see them with their tail between their legs. Oh, I guess we'll go with what the extremists want. It is. I mean, you know how I can have easy conversations with Michael Broadcorp, and he and I do disagree on a lot of things. I mean, when he was here talking about what he'd like to see the Democrats touch, you know, he put out a pretty strict list of Republican things. I have no problem with him putting those things out. We didn't really get into a policy debate on those things, but at the same time, at the end of the day, he and I – the thing about Michael Broadcorp and I that I appreciate is he honestly feels as if he's trying to make Minnesota better for everyone. I honestly think I'm trying to make Minnesota better for everyone. And at the end of the day, if you both agree with that, you know what? You can make things happen. When you look at this new suburban Republican caucus, holy God, the opening speech he had – if you go back, I think it was on Channel 4 – they did this. They had on their online. There's like, we're problem solvers who are more than happy to work with the other side of the aisle. I spit out my soda when they said that line. You mean the same political party that made Scott Jensen vote against his own insulin bill because you wanted to use it for a weapon against Democrats? That's your working with the other side of the aisle stuff? Do not trust them. Because until I see Republican politicians that are not retired politicians, but active politicians in Minnesota openly working against the extremist far right of their party, I don't think you can trust them.
They'll stick their tail between their legs, and even though I'm a suburban Republican and my constituents don't like this, I got to go with what the far-right loon balls want. There are some cases here. I brought up earlier here that case in Georgia. One Georgia Republican is hoping recent concessions by Rudy Giuliani that he made defamatory statements concerning two Georgia poll workers finally causes MAGA voters to open their eyes. In a new filing, the former New York City mayor conceded that he made defamatory and false statements about Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman, but it did not admit those statements caused damage to the pair. The two women are suing Giuliani for defamation after he falsely asserted they committed election fraud to benefit President Joe Biden. Still, Georgia GOP election official Gabriel Sterling, who you probably recognize from the whole thing with Georgia where Trump was like, I need you to find me a few thousand votes and turn everything around. Just make them up. Make me the winner. Georgia GOP election official Gabriel Sterling pointed out on Twitter Thursday that Giuliani's statement puts to rest any notion of widespread voter fraud during the 2020 presidential election. Here is the quote. Rudy Giuliani admits that he lied about Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman, he wrote. We've known for years that he lied about them and the events of the State Farm Arena. For those who still believe there is widespread voter fraud, these people are now admitting they lied to you. Giuliani's concession and Sterling's reaction to it came at a time when Fulton County DA Fannie Willis is holding a special grand jury to investigate the efforts by former President Donald Trump and others to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. Still, it remains to be seen whether Sterling's tweet will have an effect on voters. Although most of the people engaging in Sterling's tweet approved of it, a few stragglers responded to support of Trump. And I think the thing you have to understand is that we have to start looking at Republicans and saying it's okay for you not to vote Republican. A reminder, Donald Trump actually got more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016, which means all your friends, all your suburban dads who sat there and said, you know what? I didn't sign up for this. They signed up for a second. They signed up for seconds of the crap sandwich. They'd already had one crap sandwich, said, I didn't want a crap sandwich, but they ate the crap sandwich. And when the waiter came back and said, can I get you anything else? They said, I'll take a second crap sandwich. That's your Republican base. They don't even know what they're doing anymore. All they know is that they've got blind white rage against the Democrats, and they just don't know what they don't even see how badly they're hurting themselves. They are. So hopefully at some time before too long, sanity returns to the GOP. Hour number two, that's coming up next. Hour number two of the show on your Thursday, Matt and Brett. Coming up here at 5:35, Terry Hempelman's going to join us. He's with Shane over at the Guthrie Theater. Just opened up over there. We'll talk to him about that play, adapting that novel, and just catch up with him, see how he's doing. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When was the last time you ate at Al's over in Dinkytown?
I don't know if I ever have, actually.
You've never eaten at Al's in Dinkytown?
I don't think I have, no.
Last time I was there, I think it was Brianna Beerspach, and I went and grabbed breakfast.
Nice.
Yeah. We went over there. And we're able to get some food, fantastic food. Congratulations to Al's, which it does a pretty good job there. The breakfast staple near the University of Minnesota has been named the most iconic diner in the state. The Tuesday's Reader Digest published its list of most iconic diner in every state and went to Al's Breakfast in Dinkytown. Open since 1950, the hole-in-wall joint menu includes dinner classics, including pancakes, waffle, or diner classics, including pancakes, waffles, omelets, and French toast. The intimate feel of Al's only having its 13 stools. Intimate feeling is one name for it. Did you ever go to the old original Town Talk Diner when it used to be down on 55 in Lakeman?
I did not know.
That had the tiniest freaking booth I've ever seen in my life. It was one of those – when I was in I was in much better shape, and me squeezing into that thing was not easy. And they had, five bar stools and this one booth in the Town Talk. And of course, you'd walk in there and it was all these, these Scandinavians from South Minneapolis, all wearing flannel, because it was one of the places you could have egg and walleye in town in the morning. And they come in there, have their eggs and walleye, and we'd go sit there. But they had a booth. I almost wanted to get the booth because it was like, how would anyone even think about making a booth like this?
It was obnoxious. Anyway, it is a hole in the wall. 13 stools at Al's. I don't think they had that many stools at Town Talk. I don't even think they had. Just the time, kind of the time that we live in, isn't it? Al's Breakfast was formed out of an old alleyway in 1950. It had been a Minneapolis staple ever since. I did not know that.
I didn't either, no.
That they basically just put a roof over an alleyway and created Al's Breakfast. Isn't the first time Al's has received recognition for a national outlet during the COVID-19 pandemic. Esquire named Al's Breakfast one of the 100 restaurants America cannot afford to lose. How nice is that? That's a nice get. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Do you know who Derek Van Orden is?
I've definitely heard the name.
He's a Wisconsin Republican.
He's got quite the checkered history. Yeah.
He is a bag of cats, man. He is a bag of cats. I'll just read this one. Just you buckle up here, okay? Wisconsin Republican Representative Derek Van Orden cursed out a group of high school age congressional pages for taking pictures on the floor of the Capitol Rotunda on Wednesday night, Punch Bowl News has reported. Congressional pages worked for the House of Representatives and Senate carrying and delivering legislative materials and assisting lawmakers during floor debates. The pages who Van Orden yelled at were taking the photos during their last week on the job. Reporter Jake Sherman reported that while the pages were on the floor, Van Orden, using several expletives, called them lazy and told them to get off the floor. Van Orden told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that he thought the pages were being disrespectful for lying on the floor because the Capitol Rotunda was used as a field hospital during Civil War. Dude, shut up, you clown car. Not upset at all about January 6th, are you? You're not. And your friends and buddies, Orden, wiping their feces all over the Capitol building. No problem with that. But hey, you know, like I said, but double standard. January 6th, that was great. Who doesn't like a little feces on the wall of the Capitol? These guys. How dare you? How dare you? Blankety, 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 blank. He swore at these high school kids. Dude, I'm sorry you've never had sex. But, I mean, maybe if you weren't such a jerk, women would like you. I don't know. Or whatever you like. I don't judge, man. You can find someone. Oh, God. In 2021, Van Orden used campaign donations to attend the protest in Washington, D.C. that ultimately led to the January 6th attack on U.S. Capitol. Despite saying he did not enter the Capitol grounds, photos and reports have placed him beyond police barriers that day. But that was perfectly fine. The first-term congressman and complete and total moron has a history of incidents involving teenagers. In 2021, staff members of the Prairie du Chien Library accused him of harassing a 17-year-old library employee over the display of an LGBTQ-related books. Did you want more of them, Van Orden? I think we could probably get some more for you. All right. He represents Western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. He's been criticized for sharing his 2015 book that while serving in the Navy SEAL, he exposed another man's swollen blank to 2 female officers. While serving, sharing, this is him freely sharing this. This is his book. While he was a Navy SEAL, he says that he exposed another man. Okay, so this is him getting a, forgive me, firm grip. And apparently going to 2 female officers going, ladies, look what I'm doing. Really? That sounds manly. Oh, does that? That sounds manly, like a Top Gun volleyball scene. I mean, that's just manly, 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 manly. He's also been fined for trying to bring a gun onto an airplane in his carry-on luggage because he's an idiot. This is who you elected. This is who you elected. Same guy, same cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs guy. Who thinks January 6th was perfectly fine, upset because some kids who had been working for him and carrying his paperwork for him, decided to take some pictures and swore at them. We're not talking just chewed them out. Started swearing at teenagers because he's rational. I bring this up, if I may. I bring this up. Because, hey, you know, there's this idea running around right now within Republican circles that, you know, whatever happened to decency in America? Whatever happened to Mayberry? I don't ever remember the Mayberry episode where, Andy, let me tell you about the bleeping kids and the bleeping photos they're taking out here. Bleepity, 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 bleep. Although that would have been a heck, that must have been a two-parter. I mean,
that's like the lost episode, I think, that didn't make the airwaves.
Opie! Hey, Opie, what are you doing with that camera? You bleepity, 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 bleep! You're being disrespectful. Now grab a pitchfork and a flagpole. We're going to the U.S. Capitol! And. Oh, God. Oh, this guy. And by the way, this guy is like a walking rage orgasm. Have you seen this guy? I mean, he just. I mean, just seriously. That might be my new nickname. Can I? Let me ask my producer. Hey, Brett, can I use that as a nickname for Representative Derek Von Orden?
Oh, let's go with it.
Okay. Walking Rage Orgasm, Representative Walking Rage Orgasm. Sorry. I know. I'm better than this. No, not really. Actually, have you heard this show? No, actually, this is about the top of the crop right here. So, you know, it is what it is. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. If I can stay out in rural America for a bit, you know I'm a big fan of Blue Stem Prairie. This is an organization that puts out a lot of rural Minnesota, rural South Dakota news, and they have done it again for us. This is Blue Stem Prairie fact-checking Marshall Independence AG ag panelists take issue with perception farmers get large amount of money from the farm bill. All right. Okay. So let's find out a little bit more of the background here. On Wednesday, the Marshall Independent published agricultural panelists take issue with perception farmers get large amount of money from the farm bill. A news article by columnist Jim Michlinski reports, a full range of farm issues was discussed Tuesday at the Lyon County Fairgrounds by four of the area's farm leaders. A crowd of about 70 people attended a 2023 State of Agriculture Forum sponsored by the Marshall Area Chamber of Commerce. Panelists included Borboom Ag Resources Chief Executive Officer Mike Borboom, Lind Area Fourth Generation Farmer Mark Fisher, Cottonwood Area Farm Wife and Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation Vice President Carolyn Olson, and Lake Benton Area Farmer and Minnesota Soybean Growers Association President Bob Worth. The largest share of time in the hour-long forum was spent on the upcoming federal farm bill, which is currently under development in Congress. The goal is to finalize the bill by October 1st. Panelists took issue with the idea that the farm bill involves a massive amount of money given to farmers, noting that 83% of the farm bill goes towards nutrition assistance. And there's some truth in that. So where do folks get the idea that the massive amount of money was given to farmers? Well, give it to Blue Stem Prairie. They turn to the Environmental Working Group's Farm Subsidy Database to see whether any of the panelists who said, how dare you think this ag bill goes to farmers, receive money in from the federal government. Here we go. Greg Borboom. Now, this is the first guy here. Ag Resources Chief Executive Director, Mike Borboom. He has Boardroom Ag Resources LLC received payments totaling $2,252,292 in farm subsidies from 1995 to 2021. By the way, here's this other little gem we should throw out there. Other recipients at the same exact address as him include Greg and Paula Boardroom with $63,650, and Greg Boardroom, who as well, even though has been mentioned now three times, got an additional $197,966. So basically, that's about $2,500,000 this guy got. I want to stop just... These guys have the audacity to ask anyone where people get the impression that farmers are just jamming cash in their pockets off the farm bill. Here's the first guy who seems to have listed his name three times so that he could get a total of $2,500,000 worth of farm subsidy money himself from 1995 through 2021. If you're saying to yourself, well, Matt, come on. That's 1995 to 2001. Okay, let's pull out the old Matt's math corner here. 2023 minus 1995 equals 28 years. So 2500000 divided by 28. He made basically off of farm ag subsidies himself $89,000 a year. Oh, living check to check, though. I mean, I'm sure. Living check to check.
I say, in rural areas, that's a lot of money.
That's like $200,000, $300,000 in a rural area. $89,000. From 1995 to 2021, actually, I think I made a mistake here. 2021 minus 1995 equals 26 years. So if I divide $2,500,000 by 26, it's much, $96,000. There you go. 96. This guy, in the 26 years from 1995 through 2021, made $96,000 per year on average in farm subsidies. $96,000. That's before any profit made in his crops. $96,000 per year. Let me ask you something. If you live in rural America, how good would your life be if you made $96,000 per year? That's the first of them. Blue Stem Prairie did a magnificent job. We'll do the rest of these panelists complaining about, where do you get the idea we get all this money? I'll come back with that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hey, it's Tom.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So once again, four farmers show up in Marshall and basically have a wine fest about, oh, you guys are unfair. You keep saying the ag bill sends a lot of money to farmers. And so, yeah, Blue Stem Prairie did a basic little bit of research here through the EWG, the Environmental Working Group Farm Subsidy Database, to pull up how much in farm subsidies they've gotten. And the first guy is at $2.5 million in farm subsidies from 1995 through 2021. Now, let's take a look at the other three. The next guy on the panel was Lind area fourth generation farmer Mark Fisher. Now this guy doesn't look like he's gotten anything. At least it's nothing really listed. While there was a couple of Fishers farming in the Lind area listed in the database, there's no connection with a Mark Fisher other than Mark Fisher's farm in other countries, counties rather. So it may be there he could be gotten some, but there wasn't anything directly to him in the Lind area. And that's kind of what they're saying, is that from the Lind area where he described himself from being from, it's not clear that there's any farm subsidies that went to him. Third on this panel was Cottonwood area farm wife and Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation Vice President Carolyn Olson. Once again, saying, where do you get the impression that the ag bill sends a ton of money to certain farmers? The Carolyn, who identifies as an organic farmer in the article, Carolyn Olson received a mere $28,344 in farm subsidies directly from the USDA, which were all conservation subsidies. But hey, since we're in the database, let's see if there's anyone else in her house that has also received farm subsidies in that same window. Well, here's a Jonathan Olson that has $839,765 worth of farm subsidies. Then there's an Anita Jackson who got $2,526. And then there's a Kenneth Olson who got $232,196. And then there's a West Care Organics LLP, which got $4,150. And then a Kenneth D. Olson Estate, which got $2,388. Let me see if I can do the quick math on this. That's well over a million. That's a million, basically about $1,100,000. That they got. Where did he get the idea farmers are getting socialism? Socialism, you say? I have no idea. And by the way, I'll tell you what, I'll save that. I'll save that little gem. I'll save that little gem. Anyway, a 2018 article for the Minnesota Mascot notes Olson and her husband Jonathan farm near Cottonwood. She also serves as the board of directors of the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, which notes Carolyn Olson raised organic corn, soybeans, and small grains and alfalfa with her husband on a 1,100-acre farm near Cottonwood. They also finish approximately 14,000 conventional hogs annually. The URRI website also states that while there's an independent nonprofit corporation, AURI is funded in part by the Minnesota legislature. And in addition, AURI receives a funding from project fees and charitable gifts made by individuals and companies. So the and that's apparently that's, you know, kind of related with her there. She also part of the Common Ground Women Speak Up for Ag group that describes as us funding to these terms. Common Ground is developed by farmers through two national checkoff programs. Two national checkoff programs. The National Corn Growers Association, the United Soybean Board. The program also supported in part by the Minnesota Corn Growers. Some folks might call that propaganda, but what do they know? Anyway, let's go to the final guy, Lake Benton Area Farmer and Minnesota Soybean Growers Association President Bob Worth. According to EWG and Farm Subsidy Database, Worth received payments totaling $865,408 from 1995 to 2021. Another recipient at the same address was John William Worth, who had $680,794 in ag subsidies at the same address. Other than that, Bluestem has no idea why folks think farmers get large amounts of money from farm bills. Where do you get the idea? Now, that last little point, if I could make, just if I can, I wanted to hold off on this. Do you know how much Republicans lose their freaking minds when they think two people at the same address are getting $20 worth of food assistance in the same week? How dare they waste my taxpayer dollars? Meanwhile, you have basically eight is enough here, and everyone gets a massive check. And they're like, this is a good investment in rural America. Yeah. I would love to see what their houses look like. Do they have pools? Do you have a pool? Do you have a pool? I'm going to ask, do you have a pool? I bet you have a pool. Something tells me you guys have some pools. Steve is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in on farm subsidies. Welcome on in, Steve.
Hey, buddy. Now, I'm going to tell you one of my dad's favorite jokes.
Okay.
Three dogs are walking down the street.
Is it a clean? Okay, Steve, really quick beforehand, is it a clean joke?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, go. Please go. Continue. Start off again with the joke.
Okay, three dogs are walking down the street. They stop at the butcher shop, and they're admiring a side of beef hanging in the window. Mm-hmm. Now, one dog belongs to a banker, one dog belongs to a farmer, and the other dog belongs to a thief. And the banker's dog says, you know, guys, we could probably float a loan and get this tax deductible, and we'd be set for the winter. And the thief's dog says, nah, let's wait till after hours. I think my claws are long enough I can pick the lock and we can steal it. And the farmer's dog goes, you guys do everything the hard way. All we have to do is sit here and whine about it until the government buys it for us.
Well, it sure seems at least they're giving them the money to do so. That's for sure. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the phone call today. This is, first of all, can we just try that in a small town, huh? Oh, yeah. These guys, these three of the four, and once again, the other guy we're not quite sure on, at least his Lind area farm, it wasn't listed there. But the other three got at least $1 million. I think, what was the other guy here? Was $1 million. I think the lowest was $1 million. That was one woman. That was just in farm subsidies, but she doesn't even include the other things, which she clearly is getting tons of government money for this, as she sits there and says, I don't know where you get the idea farmers get all this government money. Just on the ag subsidies alone, we figured out she's made $1,100,000 divided by 26 equals $42,000 a year for those years. So how would you feel if you were a small farmer out there and you started your bank account out every year with $42,000? And this is the least amount that any of the three people who insist, where do you get the idea we get farm money? This is the least amount. Now, I don't really have a problem with helping out farmers. I think we probably need to go through and say to ourselves, should we be giving every member of the household a six-figure check? I don't think that that's a good idea. But I don't mind helping to subsidize the farmers. But if you're going to be for this system, which is pure socialism, the federal government handing money to private businesses to keep them afloat, then shut up when someone says, I want health care. Shut up when someone says we should get food to the hungry. And shut up with your higher-than-thou moral clause that we're somehow better than you. Because I can tell you right now, I don't know anyone in Minneapolis-St. Paul who's getting a $89,000 handout every single freaking year from the federal government. That's coming from you. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We got Terry there. We're going to be talking Guthrie Theater when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Terry Hempelman's back with us again. It's nice to have him return. He is an actor. We talked to him before when he was at the Guthrie for Sweat. He is now taking part in the latest Guthrie presentation, which is Shane, which is at the McGuire Proscenium stage. Kind enough to join us today to talk about that. Hey, Terry, how are you today, my friend?
Well, howdy, partner. Let's talk Westerns.
Well, we should talk the abrupt change that you're doing here. Because was Sweat the last show that you did before this one?
Yeah, at the Guthrie. Yeah, that was the last show last summer. Yeah.
Well, you're an actor, and you're a good actor, because you're going from basically blue-collar steel mill area kind of worker to a classic Western. How many Westerns have you done many Westerns on stage before?
Let me think for a second. Never.
Well, I actually thought about that if I can. It is remarkable considering that in the 1950s, Westerns were the thing. You know, you had the books, you had the TV, you had the movies. But all of a sudden it dawned on me, it's like there's a few like Oklahoma and stuff like that that kind of got adapted, but you never saw the massive crossover to live theater.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say in defense of us theater artists, you know, it's kind of tough to put wagon trains and guy falling off of the upper balcony in the bar, you know, crashing through the railing in the bar fight and horses and stuff like that, I think might be one of the challenges. But I mean, that's that's some of the stuff that we love about Westerns, but what we also love is the characters, and that's just fertile ground for what we do in the theater, you know.
Shane is a beloved Western classic. Is this the first time it's been developed for the stage?
That I know of, yeah. And, I mean, it's truly, I wasn't joking. It's like I've never been involved with a Western for the stage, so it's just not done. And, in the last few years, we were sort of getting some news of other productions being developed. But, yeah, hardly any at all, and certainly not Shane. I've never heard of anyone trying to do that on the stage. And it is a classic story. I remembered it vaguely, but we encountered people along the way, audience members and people who worked on the project, who Shane was such a touchstone for their youth. You know, it was often a novel that you read as a young adult, or a movie that you saw, and with the young man who's the narrator at the center of it, leaves a lasting impression on people that they still, whenever they have come to see our show, or even people who were working on it, would speak passionately about the impression that Shane made on them growing up. It's wild.
If you don't mind taking just a few minutes here to talk, why don't you briefly? Why don't you give us a little bit of the story, the background of Shane?
Well, it's a classic Western. There's a family of homesteaders. They are working hard, but facing tough forces in cattle ranchers and people who have designs on uprooting them from their little toehold that they have on their homestead. And a mysterious stranger comes to town, and you learn a little bit about him, but there's a lot you don't know. And you realize that something really, really tough is going to need to be done, and that this mysterious stranger might be the only one who can do it. And stay tuned to see what happens.
That's all we're going to say about the plot. The novel is by Jack Schaefer, but the Guthrie does, and they do brilliantly, it's been updated a little bit. Karen Zacharias, part of New Perspective here. Talk a little bit about that, because it's not necessarily the Western that people might remember.
And yet, I mean, I think there's a lot of talk about this, and the genius of our playwright, Karen Zacharias, is, her family were immigrants from Mexico. And she tells this story of reading this novel, as many other, you know, sixth graders, I think she was, read it, and being so, impacted by it, and even she says that the mysterious stranger, she pictured in her mind, because it's not particularly described in any other way, she pictured her baseball hero, Roberto Clemente. She pictured Shane as Roberto Clemente. And so the beauty of the way that she has reimagined it is that more people are included in the story that were included in the Old West. Fully one half of the cowboys in the 19th century were either Latino or black, whereas in our Hollywood movies, that's just hardly ever seen. So just by including someone in that, without doing any preaching or saying anything about it, I've spoken to people already who have seen the show that meant so much to them, and now all we're doing is telling the same story, but everybody feels like it's about them. And it's the same story, you know, as far as updating the story. Mm-hmm. I think she's really held on to the beauty of what a Western is and just made it so that everyone realized that this can be part of their history and their lore, you know, their folklore, the characters of the Old West. Yeah.
Well, and as you describe it there, I mean, the history of the area, I mean, you had a lot of blacks who were escaping slavery moving to the West, and where they were able to kind of establish themselves there. And of course, the Western United States was, you know, part of Mexico for a while. It's got a large Hispanic history here. So it's easy to see if you actually know the history. And as you said, I think that whitewashing that happened in the 50s and 60s of what the West was like doesn't do it justice. And this is not nearly as some people would come back in and say this is not nearly the reach that some people think it is.
Yeah. And so, but once again, the beauty, the genius of our playwright is that just with the, you know, including some other people in the cast, she's able to tell the same story and make you realize that it's so much more universal than it might have appeared with the whitewashing, as you said, of Hollywood movies. So that's exciting that more people can say, "Oh, that's me in that story," and the story, and then we can get back to just telling this great story and getting you caught up in the drama of what's going to happen and the inexorable fate, you know, that you see in these westerns. That it's sort of steam, you know, it's like a train ride. You get on and you know where it's going, and you know something's going to happen, and you can't look away, you know, and so. That's really exciting to do it in the theater. We're having a ball doing that.
Yeah. And forgive me, Zacharias, Karen Zacharias, this is her second play she's done at the Guthrie now. It's the first one. Did she do the same thing, to your knowledge? Did she do the same thing where she took an established piece and then kind of updated it with much more, well, frankly, realistic expectations? I mean, was that, or was that an original play she did the first time?
My understanding is that Native Gardens, the play that was at the Guthrie right before the pandemic, was an original creation. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the most done plays in America today. What a treat for us to be in the room, because we were working on this script. You know, sometimes we actors, we go in and you have a Shakespeare play or something, and we begin the first day learning the lines, figuring out what we're going to do, practicing the stage combat or the dances or whatever. This play, she was there with us working on the script, and she's such an amazing, generous, collaborative person. You know, she would say to me, "Terry, what do you think about this line?" And I just can't believe it. One of the most produced playwrights in America today is there with us, being generous, being open to ideas, and really a tremendous collaborator. It was just a tremendous process, as we say, you know, working on this play. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, the sign of someone who's really good, because I mean, it takes the input from everyone. And I think, you know, that's what you're describing here, is someone that understands this is not just them. It's a lot of people involved here. Terry Hempelman joining us right now. Your characters you play in the play, do you care to share? How much can you share about them? I don't want to give away anything. So how much can you share about the characters you play?
Yeah, I'm having a ball. My first guy is a farm implement salesman, and it's a great scene where we see some of the challenges that these homesteaders face with a slick talking farm implement salesman who is trying to put one over on our hero Joe Starrett or his family. And But we also get introduced to the fact that Shane might be able to help out as he intervenes in that scene. And so that's my first guy. And then the other guy that I play is the saloon keeper, Sam Grafton. And he is right out of the Old West. I hope that people, when they see me as Sam Grafton, it just takes them right into the great characters of you might find in any Western. And so I'm just having a ball with, you know, stuff that we, as a kid, you know, you would grow up and watch these Westerns and sort of act it out. And I feel like I'm kind of getting to do that. And on the Guthrie stage, it's pretty much a trip.
Well, and let's talk about that as well. Okay, so they did the Hamlet over on the Thrust stage. That was pretty spectacular as far as staging goes. They did possibly one of the greatest stagings I've ever seen in Murder on the Orient Express. You said it when we began this. This is not generally a genre that you see develop for the stage, because shootouts, wagon trains, horses, these are not easy things to kind of take care of on, you know, on a stage and convey as easy as possible. Talk a little bit about the staging. How are you able to pull this off?
Yeah, so the way I would describe it is that we create a poetic world where we are telling the stories that that you know and love from this much-beloved Western, but we had to come up with a style to do it. And so have you seen the production yet?
No, I'm going on Saturday. I'm going on Saturday to see it.
Okay. So through the lighting and the stage, the set design, and the movement that the actors do, we have created what I would call a poetic world where the action from a Western can take place. And I don't know, without a spoiler alert, it's just we have a tremendous creative team. Mm-hmm. The lighting has borrowed a lot from the world of dance.
Okay.
So not to be too technical, this is kind of a deep dive into my world, but a lot of the lighting is horizontal, if you can picture that, rather than vertical. So rather than the lights being overhead, there's a lot of lighting from the side. And it just gives a quality to the movement that is dramatic. It's high contrast. And then along with movement that is oftentimes stylized, we had a tremendous one of the creative team. We had a director, a writer, of course. We also had a movement director, Vanessa Severo, who has created a sort of vocabulary of movement that puts us in a little bit of a stylized world that the director has even, in my conversation with him, he has said it's a little bit like Greek drama. So, and that lends itself to this Western kind of a narrative where it's iconic characters. You can sometimes see the evil that's coming, but there's nothing you can do about it. And you follow the story. That's part of the thrill of it is going into that. So it's dramatic. It has a dramatic look to it. It has a stylized movement to it. And I think if you come to see it, you're going to see a really original piece of theater telling a story that you know and love.
Mm-hmm.
Well, does that make sense?
Well, I've got great faith within the Guthrie. They put on productions that I have spent my life. I've been in bigger cities, small towns. I've been out there. I mean, outside of New York, and some Chicago stuff, I don't know of a theater that consistently hits it out of the park with the staging as they do. And the lighting, as you describe it, I think conveying that to the audience is they do it so well. I'm really looking forward to seeing this presentation. If you don't mind me asking, Terry, something a little bit away from this for a quick second here, because someone just did message me. It's like, how are they? I thought the actors were on strike. You're having the presentation. We probably want to clear this up. The actors union that's on strike is the TV and movie people. The theater actors are represented by a completely different group, correct?
Well, yeah, and we you are correct there. There are two separate unions. The union that the stage actors belong to is Actors Equity, and the union that is on strike is SAG-AFTRA, which were the Screen Actors Guild and the Association of Film, TV, and Radio Actors. So they're two different things, the stage actors and the on-camera and radio people. We stage actors fully support our brothers and sisters in the Screen Actors Guild in their strike to help settle some of these issues around use of the material, use of our likeness for, you know, who knows what, because the media is changing so much. So a likeness can be streamed, in many different forms, and our union is trying to get a hold on that so that people cannot make money off of our likeness mm-hmm. without us getting anything from it. And the other thing that is scary is the AI thing. We don't really know how far and wide that is going to go. Certainly, it's a concern for the writers. But with actors, too, where someone's likeness is essentially cloned and then put into the background of another picture or something without the person whose likeness it is being paid for it or even notified, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So those two issues are not really an issue for the stage actors, at least at this point, you know.
Well, yeah.
So, So we stage actors are not out on strike, but we do fully support many of us. I'm a member of both unions.
Yeah.
I'm a member of the Stage Actors Union and a member of SAG-AFTRA. And I fully support the people walking picket lines. And I think it's if you want to hear some rousing rhetoric, listen to Fran Drescher, the president of the union, speaking about what the issues are and how important it is to the survival of this business and the survival of artists who create this work.
Yeah. I had Patty Vasquez out of Chicago, who's out there working as a lead out there about this issue. Yeah, I know it's a huge issue. Every one of your actors, almost every time, there's always someone there that's – they're all basically working in theater, but they're also working in TV and radio. So I know this is affecting all of them. All my best to everyone involved in this. I'm 100% on your side. This whole AI thing, as you said, it's not affecting theater yet. But if this is not defined right now, it's going to. And I think I'm 100% on board with that. But once again, it's a great way to help support. I mean, as you lose possible, while this with strikes going on, possible jobs with other area by seeing you at the Guthrie, it's one way we can help support all the actors that are there who are, part of that theater union. So I appreciate all you guys do.
Well, Matt, I appreciate you saying that. And I just want to say to the listeners, if you do get a chance to come out and see live theater, I just want to thank you, because the last 3 years have been challenging for us, career-wise, but just challenging for my soul. It's what I love doing. And I know my colleagues feel the same way, and we've been having great houses over there at the Guthrie. There are tickets available, but we've been having great houses, and I just, it means so much to me that the people of Minneapolis are coming out and supporting live theater, and God, we love that. We love that. Many of the, there's three of the, in our cast that are local, three and then two, essentials, and, but the other people, I think, are just getting a taste of how great this community is and how supportive it is to our performing arts and especially the theater. And so to your listeners, I just thank you. If you're out there seeing live theater, it means the world to us.
Shane is at the Guthrie. It runs till August 27th, so runs through pretty much all the way up to the State Fair. Go get tickets. I'm going to go see it on Saturday. Come on out, see it with me on Saturday. Terry Hempelman. Terry, anytime you want to come back, man, you are always welcome back on the show. I will always give you a platform, okay?
I appreciate it, Matt. And as I come by the stage door, I'll say hi if you come to the show.
I will do that. I'll come on by and say hi to you, okay? Terry Hempelman. Terry, thank you very much. Guthrie Theater, Shane, goes till August 27th. Let's take a break, come back, wrap up the show for a Thursday. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, I just heard from Sally Joe over at Blue Sim Prairie. This story, nitrates in southwestern Minnesota's water do not give water to infants in Ellsworth. It's not just drought that's plaguing Minnesota's water needs. Earlier this month, Blue Sim republished commentary from MinnPost. Can the state control nitrates in Minnesota waters? In an article posted on the newspaper's website, the Worthington Globe, just after 2 p.m. Thursday, there's this. The city of Ellsworth has issued a drinking water warning after water sample results collected on July 18th and July 24th showed high levels of nitrates. Do not give water to infants under 6 months old or use it to make infant formula. Hey, nitrate levels of 15 milligrams were detected, which exceeds the nitrate standard. Oh, that's great. Good. By the way, I also want to give Stan credit here. Stan, remember we were talking about farm subsidies, and you know, even the lowest amount of farm subsidies, not factoring in all the rest of the money, was $42,000 a year they've gotten in farm subsidies, right? Remember that? Remember that? I remember that. That was just about 30 minutes ago. Hey, you remember a few days ago when everyone was saying, the Republicans were saying you had to stop Joe Biden from giving free college to kids because that's a waste of money? You know what it wasn't? Yeah, it wasn't $42,000 a year. It was actually less. So, yeah, you're all hypocrites. Hey, Native Roots Radio is up next. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.